Welcome, folks. This is Mark Steiner, and that, yes, is Marvin Gaye. What's going on? One of the most important albums, I think, ever produced here in the United States and the world. And an old friend, Vincent Thomas, who's artistic director of What's Going On Project, has turned this piece into a dance piece. He joins us in studio. And Vincent, good to have you back in the house.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here.
Joining us as well is Stephanie Crockett, who is a company member with the What's Going On Project. Stephanie, good to meet you.
Yes, nice to meet you as well.
Sujan Shrestha joins us, who's a video designer and collaborator on the project. Good to meet you, Sujan.
Pleasure to meet you.
Welcome. So this is really amazing. So I saw some of the clips of the stuff you did in D.C., and I know the album, I wrote it myself. I didn't, wish I had. But talk about this, the beginning of this project. When you talk about the piece that was first written in 69, 1970, the album came out, it was very much a period piece about the Vietnam War and what's been going on in the inner cities and protests. And here we are in 2017. So talk about
So the piece started probably a couple of years ago with a conversation with Richard Pickleton, who's the husband of Carla Perlow at Dance Place, and he had this idea about celebrating a Washingtonian, Marvin Gaye, because he was born in Washington D.C. So that's where it started. And so we kind of talked about it and felt a lot of energy in wanting to do the project. And then time passed. And in that fall, I actually started with the very last section, which is now the last section, What's Going On, at Towson University, setting a piece on the dance company, which Stephanie was in. So it's interesting that she's was in that very first piece, and now she's part of the whole evening. So, and then maybe a year passed, and we ended up getting some funding from NPN out of New Orleans, and thus launched the reality of the piece. Mm. And so the entire piece, it looks at life, love, and social justice through the lens of Marvin Gaye's music. So, of course, there are tunes that are familiar, and there are tunes that one might have no idea that Marvin Gaye recorded. And so I like it for that. And it's only in the second half where the reality of that What's Going On album really comes to fruition.
What do you mean, pieces we wouldn't have known?
One of the pieces that we use is his version of Mona Lisa.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And Funny Valentine is another one that, you know.
Oh, so they're not all from the album What's Going On.
It's not all from the album of What's Going On, but all the music in the production is Marvin Gaye.
Wow. So you picked out some fairly obscure pieces.
Yeah. Yeah. And but there's also some that are, you know, very familiar. Hitchhike.
Right. That's old.
That's old.
Let's Get It On.
That was, yeah.
What did you say?
I said, Let's Get It On.
Yeah. Let's Get It On, yeah, right.
And, you know, Hitchhike was one of his first
Hits.
Hits, yeah. Right. So so through that process, we had an audition in D.C., and out of a large number of dancers, we selected 8. And within that, we have also on the artistic team Sylvia Suma, who brings a West African aesthetic to the
program. Right, I saw her interviewed in one of the videos.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And
right.
Also Ralph Glenmore, who has a jazz flair that he brings to the project as well. And the other artist collaborators is Sujan, of course, with his amazing videographic designing and his eye. And also his sensibility about being a human being, which I thought was extremely important in the development of this work.
What do you mean by that?
Sujan has such a keen awareness of what it means to be a human being and how that aligns with the work that I do. Hmm. And there's a dramaturg as well that was part of the creative process, too.
Wow. So when he said you met Chua Tausman, were you a student there when you met?
Yes, I was a student there. Like you said, first just starting off with just a clip from what's going on. And then he announced that he was going to hold auditions for it. So I said, hey, I'm not doing anything over the summer. Might as well go to the audition. And it was a two-day audition process and a lot of information to learn as far as choreography. How do these choreographers work? What is their style they're looking for? And then coming into the piece, I was just like, okay, literally, what's going on? What am I doing here? Because Marvin Gaye, that wasn't really my time.
I was about to ask you about that. Right.
I'm only 22, right. So Marvin Gaye, that wasn't my time, but that was right. My parents' time. So I was used to listening to him in the car at my grandma's house on her record player. But as far as just listening to myself, no, of course I knew some of the common songs, like, you know, What's Going On, Let's Get It On. But this piece really made me listen to his music, his lyrics, what is he saying, and then how as an artist am I going to be able to convey that message to the audience. So it was a very overwhelming, but...
So a quick question for Tony Sujana, because this is, and come back to you to talk about the power of this for this moment in this century. So I'm curious, as a younger person, 22 years old, you said, this is not your genre of music nor your time, right? So what is it about this piece that spoke to you as a dancer? Because, I mean, as an actor, dancers, even though they have to, there's a choreography they're given by the person who does the piece, mm-hmm. you also have your own interpretation of what you bring to that.
Yes.
As a dancer. So what is it about this piece from 40-some years ago to you now?
Even though this piece is, as you say, 40 years ago, it's still relevant today, right now, because just talking with my friends, we're literally like, what is going on in this world? And so during the process of coming up with the choreography, we were able to just sit and talk with one another about what is bothering us right now. What are we able to celebrate in our communities? What is bothering us in our communities? And taking that knowledge and sharing with each other, we were able to really find that passion and what can we emote with the choreography from how we're actually feeling.
Hmm. And Sujana, so your role in this, I mean, I saw some of the videos. So the video is part of this production as well, right?
Sure, yeah. I think when Vincent brought up this idea of, Marvin Gaye project and what's going on, I was quite fascinated with it because I think, for me, I didn't grow up in this country. So I was born in Nepal, and, you know, for me, introduction to Marvin Gaye was very later in life, but mm-hmm. I kind of fell in love with his lyrics and anything else, and I wanted to create a great way to play with some of the things that I do in the research platform, but also to engage global perspective on what a basic human rights is and how do we engage that in a larger audience space, rather than it is not a categorization in America, but the larger, broader, all throughout this planet. What does it mean to be a human? And I think that that's the way I played this, the whole story or narrative in this.
Hmm. So Vincent, so you choreographed this?
Yes, it was myself and Ralph Glenmore and Sylvia Suma.
Who I saw in a video that I assume you did.
Right.
Right.
Most of them.
Yeah, right. So what role does the video play in the production?
Well, for me, I think it's an important role because some of the clips that are seen are from the 60s during those times, and we also have images from very current times, like right now.
That you edited together for this piece, that you did?
Right. So, but also the living room piece, right?
Yeah.
So that was the original concept. We have how the social class is defined throughout the world as a living room. So I wanted to play with that one framework for quite a bit of time just to see what the progression of living room around the world is, and what does that mean to be who you become, and how does that tie into the Marvin Gaye's lyrics. And so we played that through 60s all the way through today.
And part of the living room that he's referring to, the seed for me as a jumping off place of what I recognize and where I heard that music was watching my parents have a house party in their small living room. And so that idea right there really sets a stage to see the work. and how it folds, how it unfolds from the small, tight room where bodies in it dancing their hearts out, to how it opens up for the entire stage, but also for the entire audience to experience too. Because hopefully it will allow them to tap into their personal stories and their lives.
Because the living room piece is really important. I mean, like when you think about that, I mean, that is mm-hmm. how people roll back in time. I guess mm-hmm. somewhat today too, but people,
mm-hmm. yep.
you know, the dance parties inside your living room or mm-hmm. down the basement, and just mm-hmm. people just jam and put the LP on and people just dance.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Or there are a lot of people who just don't have living rooms.
Right. And there's
yeah.
that.
There's that.
So I'm curious. Well, I'm going to come back to this again. Marvin Gaye in 2017, as opposed to 1970. Not opposed to, but and 1970 when the album came out. So I'm curious. So you know, when I think about the world that you grew up in, Stephanie, there was like, so you're 22. So your musical genre is probably closer to hip hop and what?
Mm-hmm. R&B.
And R&B as well, right?
Yes. Yeah?
So I'm curious as somebody who, how does it switch for you dancing in this rhythm and style as opposed to either the classical stuff you might have been trained in at BSA or Towson and this kind of R&B sound that comes out of this?
Yeah, so I definitely first had to do my research going on YouTube, which is current in my time, watching the Soul Train, seeing uh-huh, how those
right.
how did those right. dancers dance back then, because obviously we didn't, you know, let's break out into the Soul Train line, everyone. Like, we didn't do that, so I had to do my research. Also, just talking with the company members, because some of them are a lot experienced, older, some of them are wives, which married with children, so also listening to them, but once again doing my research. And of course with my music, a lot of the artists, they refer back to the people before them,
right.
so it's kind mm-hmm. of this evolving circle that everyone keeps, you know, using one another.
Yep. No, that makes sense. And one thing that I think about with this piece and how you all might have approached this is that I was thinking about how the piece started. So I forget the guy's first name, Benson, who first wrote the piece and brought it to Marvin Gaye. He wrote this piece because he saw demonstrators getting beaten up in Berkeley and then wrote this piece. And then knew people who knew Marvin sat down with him and said, you know, Marvin wanted him to do the piece. And Marvin said, I'll do it if I can be one of the writers. And he rewrote pieces of it and then put the music to it and everything else and changed a lot, because he wanted to have, as he put it, more of a ghetto flavor. As he put it, right back in the day. So, and he wanted to make it very political as well, because his brother had just gotten back from Vietnam, so he had this really emotional piece with his brother back from Vietnam, and he had grown up in the inner city, and all that was a piece of what he was trying to say here about the power of that moment. And so you one of the things you said earlier, I just want to set that up, to say it that way, because one of the things, Vincent, you said was that it's very relevant for right now.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So I'm curious how that part of, you know, you have a creative spirit, but you also have this social consciousness that goes along with your creative spirit. So I'm wondering how those two blended for you and what it says to you right now.
Well, they blended quite seamlessly, you know, as they did when I first set that ending section in 2014, I think it was. Mm-hmm. And so I was really curious about, one, the world I live in, the world we live in, and then I was perplexed with what's happening with all types of injustices. And so that hasn't changed since 2014, and I'm still living in this particular work. So it also gave me an opportunity to ask questions that I have about the world I live in through art. That's also the power of what we do. And through a lot of conversations with Sujan too, and about images and people through history and time, it really helped with educating me and getting me into a deeper place about the world I live in and what can I do about it.
Because you're working, I mean, I've seen your work in the past. I'm dying to see this because I know how good you are as a dancer. I don't know if you're still dancing.
I am.
Yeah. I am. Not done yet. So,
I'm still dancing.
Yeah. He's not going to stop.
And as a choreographer, you know, and as kind of a creative thinker. Mm-hmm. And so, John, I'm curious. So, I'm curious what images you use. I mean, how did you approach the visual background that you created for this piece?
So for me, it was sort of an idea of playing with the object more than images. So I look at, you know, since our Vincent and I, we talked about quite early about the, you know, the living room as a space, but I wanted to give a space looking from inside out and looking from outside to in. And so that was one of the ways.
Did you actually shoot it in a living room?
No, we actually recreated the whole set.
Okay.
So it was basically a modeling, technique we used to do that. But we carefully crafted every single object to make sure they fit into the theme, making sure the perspective from the audience works within that particular object, integrating and disintegrating objects within each sections where they might fit in or not fit in. So I played around with all these areas quite a bit with Vincent and, of course, the rest of the crew.
And the new pieces you picked?
There are pieces we picked. There are pieces I picked. We looked at what makes sense. I looked at some of the historical backgrounds in living rooms. I wanted to know how other cultures and other traditions had used living rooms. Whether there are some people that was with no living rooms. How do they live? What is their perception of living room would be if they don't have it? And people in different classes, different centuries, different age, different. Version and within the United States as well, the way the living room functions, a classification of living room, perhaps we can say that. And so we kind of integrated all those elements together.
And what is left is still that memory of me looking around the corner, seeing my parents and their sweaty friends dancing in a tight space, and they were full out.
Oh, yeah.
And
No question.
They were full out. And
so that's supposed to be.
Yeah. And it wasn't until doing this project that I realized that, and that was their way of dealing with social justice. Especially when I recognized that there are conversations that I have not had or did not have with my parents about their role in the social justice environment during those times.
Well, when you think about Marvin Gaye, he said something along the lines of, I'm not a poet, I'm not a writer, I forget everything he said, but I know how to make music. And this is the role I'm going to play in fighting for change and in fighting against racism and fighting for a world without poverty and against police brutality. This was, so he's in, and against war itself. Mm. So he said, it's my music that can do that. Which is why sadly this music is as relevant in terms of what drove the music now as it was 46 years ago, 47 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there have been artists that were still trying to keep a lot of that alive. John Legend did an album with The Roots that harkened to a lot of this music as well. It's quite exciting. And I feel that, as a performer with the cast, we keep finding new things every single performance about the work and about where we are as a country.
That's important because, one of the things people can look at dance or any other medium, really, but you can look at dance and go, it's static in the sense that you rehearse it, you have this choreographer who tells you what to do, and then you just do it. But it's
completely different with this piece. Like, you have to be so emotionally invested in this piece because it's really, yes, it's about us, but it's not about us because what's going on in this world right now, people have to see it within us and not just on the outskirts. Like, they really have to feel it. And sometimes there's pieces where we're coming off the stage crying because we're so emotionally invested that we're like, wow, this is serious right now.
Mm-hmm. It is serious right now. Well, I can't wait to see this piece. I've only seen snatches of it on the video. Sujan Shrestha,
that's
the one?
Yeah, that's
A video designer, collaborator. I'm looking forward to seeing how this works for this the dance piece. Stephanie Crockett, company member here with What's Going On. It's good to have you here in the studio as well.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
And we're going to take a very short break here. A little bit of Marvin Gaye. Meet two other people associated with this from a different angle. Don't go away. All right, folks, welcome back. That little teeny break was a song that's in this production that you can hear, Hitchhike. One of the great old songs of Marvin Gaye, maybe one of his first major hits. Mm-hmm. Nobody hitchhikes anymore, nor knows that dance anymore, Vincent.
Well, we're creating it.
We can't wait to see it.
We have created it.
So, Vincent Thomas is still with us, Artistic Director of the What's Going On project. Joined here also by John Nethercup, who's Executive Director of the Public Justice Center. There's a partner in this, which we're going to hear about, and Joe Reinsel, who is a video artist who does... That's something to do with the intermission of this program we're about to find out about as well. So good to have you all here.
Thank you.
So let's start here. So talk, what's this partnership?
Well, so last spring, I went to the public...
Here, by the way, I should say John Ethercutt in the Public Justice Center at Vincent Thomas.
Yes.
That's
yes.
here you couldn't see.
Yes,
that's what's
indeed.
Here.
Yes.
We were talking now. Thank you, Mark.
So Jennifer Pelton invited me to their gala. And at the Meyerhof, and at this event, I mean, it was just huge. And the speaker, Brian Stevenson, left a mark on me and how he posed to the audience the four things needed to in order for change to happen in your community. And so after this event, that speech and those things had just been circulating in me and moving me so much that I knew I wanted to do something more with Jennifer and the Public Justice Center. And she came to we talked about this this project, What's Going On, and she came to see it in the fall. And she knew as well immediately that the Public Justice Center was someone that needed to be in collaboration with this, especially here in Baltimore.
So what does that mean, John?
Well, that and just to start, Mark, for those who don't know the Public Justice Center, but we're a social justice advocacy organization. We use legal advocacy tools. Our unofficial tagline is we're pissed off lawyers for social change. And we definitely do like to work with artists, and we have a history of that, which Vincent mentioned. But it's partly because in all of us, you know, we're social justice advocates, but some of us are artists, or some of us at least appreciate art, even if we're not artists ourselves. And we find that many artists are also social justice advocates. So there's this natural coalition, I think, that can come together, and we like to encourage that to bring arts and social justice together. The example of our 30th anniversary gala, which we had at the Meyerhof, and Brian Stevenson was our speaker, that was a good example where we had a street artist creating interactive street art in the auditorium right before the show. We had music, we had students who had done art productions. So, you know, that was an example of how we bring art and justice together. And then, once we, generally, we're looking for artists that are talking about or expressing themes of social justice in their art. Mm-hmm. And then if we can sponsor events like that, I think that's just bringing together of two natural worlds. So, I got to see... the show last fall, I guess
in September
when it was in Washington, and clearly I was just blown away from my first sight of it. So it was great to be able to sponsor it here in Baltimore now.
And that was a preview that he saw.
Right,
it wasn't.
It was a work in progress.
And then Jennifer introduced me to John.
Joe.
To Joe. I'm sorry.
No, it's John. And
his work as well has lines of social awareness and social justice. And so it's just been an incredible journey thus far. Mm-hmm. And looking forward to, and he can speak about his role as well.
Yeah, please do.
Yeah, so, I mean, what we wanted to, we kind of came together, create a series of conversations through morning meetings to kind of figure out how we would connect and make a, how the Public Justice Center wanted to create more conversation during and after the event. Because mm-hmm. the interest of what they would like to do, it seemed like, in my position, is kind of thinking about how to move the ideas that Vincent is kind of trying to bring during the performance further after the performance is finished. So there are some interactive elements that Vincent has during the show, such as fans that they use, the old church fans. And this is something that Vincent has in the show. And so one of the things is trying to create different kinds of conversations from the audience to have them think about this, make them a little more active in the during the intermission and after the show by having them write on the fans. But then also I will be photographing and then bring them into the intermission space after to see them in the and after to see them with their fan and with others after the show to kind of have a different way of seeing each of the conversation things that people are saying. Also, besides just having that part, we're going to have a series of ways that they can talk to each other through writing. So. Very simple. I love this kind of interaction. It's kind of one of my favorite kind. I do a lot of work in computerized interaction with my artwork, a lot of things with that you touch and play with. But this is basically Sharpies and butcher paper. And so, and it's great. it's basically, we're putting up butcher paper on the wall, and we have a series of words that we're going to be using for with this. You know, on the card, we have move, act, live, listen, and speak with this. I mean, putting these over on the wall, and then we're going to be inviting people and just having them start to talk, you know, within the frame of the show, perhaps, or within what they're thinking of at that particular moment, okay? And what I've seen from doing this at other projects that I've worked in is it just starts to create these new threads of conversation that are really rich. And it's almost... It's really engaging and interesting to see. So besides doing that, I'm also going to be photographing them in this to kind of bring that in. Because I think it's important not to just have the intimate connection with the wall to each person, but also having a little more public so people can see that in the intermission and at the end of the performance.
So I only have a couple minutes left, so
yeah,
let me let you finish.
So I was going to say, and that is extended within the community on Saturday, from 11 a.m. till 12 p.m. for an hour, I'll do an open master class, an open workshop around it's just social dancing and some stories. That'll happen on Saturday, the 4th. And then on Monday evening, the 13th, we'll have a longer what's going on table talk and from 7 p.m. till 8:30. And
at the Theater Project.
No, these will be held at Motor House. And so it gives the audience an opportunity to engage beyond the performance, which we feel is really, really important.
Right.
So again, to get there, tickets for what's going on. Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, right?
Friday night is an invited dress, and I want to encourage people to come to that. And Saturday at 8 o'clock and Sunday at 3 o'clock.
The performances at Theater Project.
At Theater Project.
And people go to
www.theaterproject.org for tickets.
And so don't miss it, because when Vincent Thomas puts on a performance, it's a wonder to behold. It truly is. And so it really is. And so Vincent Thomas is the Artistic Director of What's Going On Project. We've heard from John Ethicott here, who's the Executive Director of the Public Justice Center. Their partner in this project, in this performance here in Baltimore, and Joe Reinsel, who is a video artist who is collaborating with Vincent, and we'll see his work and the work that goes on there, these interactive pieces as well. Earlier we talked to Stephanie Crockett, a member of the company, What's Going On, and to Sujan Shrestha, who is the video designer and collaborator in the project. And thank you all for coming in. And Vincent, always good to see you, Vincent.
You as well. As well. Thank you.
Coming up next, we're going to be talking with Joshua David Robinson and Marcus Gardley. Marcus Gardley wrote the play, X or Betty Shabazz versus the Nation. He's one of America's most important young playwrights. And we talk with Joshua David Robinson, who's an actor from the acting company in the productions coming to Baltimore. But before we go to break, I want to remind you, the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, has been helping its members and its community prosper for the last 80 years. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. More information at www.mecu.com.